our COVID-19 leaves. We know that it's probably felt like at times you're drowning in these COVID leaves. And these Q&A sessions have been our effort to throw you a lifeline. Based on the number of questions they've decreased for us over the past 2 weeks, we're hoping now that the COVID leave process is more like Nemo and less like Jaws. Despite that, we know that you may still be underwater, and we hope you feel supported enough today to take a breath and look around. Because even underwater, you can be surrounded by some pretty amazing things. So before we get started today with our session, wanted to introduce you to a new fish in our school and also say goodbye to our former starfish. For those of you who don't know, last Friday was Lorena's last day with Disability Management Division. And we just wanted to say a big goodbye to her and a huge thank you. Lorena was with us during an unprecedented time of leave of absence and accommodation process related to COVID-19. And she supported us through that in an amazing way. So thank you, Lorena, for all that you did. And I'd also like to introduce you to and have you welcome our newest member of the disability management team, Jess Alanez. Jess is with us today, but he does not have his video feed. Unfortunately, we've had a little bit of a hiccup in getting all of his systems access available to him this week, but you will certainly see him in future Q&A sessions. Jess started with disability management on Monday. He formerly worked for the University of Pepperdine. He has over 7 years of experience with leave of absence and accommodation, and I'm really looking forward to he and Courtney being a very strong disability management team to support everyone throughout the county. And as usual, today we also have representation from CEO Benefits with Tracy Sewell and Ken Mizuno being here today. So today's format, we're going to have three different things that we touch on. First, we cast our fishing net to get answers to questions that were unresolved in last session's Q&A. Tracy and I will share those pearls of wisdom with you that will hopefully help to put a closure to those particular issues. Then we're going to float through the Q&A wave. Ken is going to read the questions that you submitted in advance of today. Courtney will read the answers, and as usual, that will all be posted at the COVID HR site. And as usual, you're encouraged to ask for clarification or provide feedback as we get through each of those questions. Then lastly, we get to hear from our favorite fish in the sea. This is your time to bubble up questions to the surface that we can answer for you in real time. So before we get started, I'm going to ask Ken just to give us a little bit of housekeeping so that everybody's on the same page.
Perfect. Good morning, everyone. This morning, everyone will be muted to reduce background noise, so you won't be able to speak. We will be tape recording this Zoom meeting. It will be available on our website. And if you need to ask questions, you can either use the raise hand or chat methods that are available on the app. And I think that's it.
Thank you, Ken. So we will go ahead and get started. So Tracy, do you want to kick us off on some of the old business that we promised to get back to the group on?
Sure. So the takeaway that I had after last session was the question about how we determine how much employees are receiving from unemployment, or even if they're receiving any benefit from unemployment. I had thought that it worked the same as SDI, where we got notices that show the benefit weekly amount. That is not the case. We do get forms that go to Anna Cruz and Jenny Holst. That just verifies their employment and what they've been paid by the county. But what we did find was that EDD does do audits. There's a benefit audit form that will get mailed out that wages are reported to EDD if somebody's on unemployment or receiving any kind of unemployment benefit. So an audit will be done by EDD If they see that the employee was making more off than on, they will send a form that's titled benefit audit to the county, and we will let them know what the employee was receiving from us. So eventually the employee could have an overpayment if they're receiving more off than on. So this is just a message that we need to make sure employees know if they are going to apply for unemployment. If they find that they are making more off, they might want to put the overpayment piece aside, because either the county or EDD, depending on where the overpayment came from, will be looking to collect that back. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, because some of the questions today are surrounding this whole overpayment issue. Oh, I think I need to, Catherine muted, so I think I need to unmute her now. Let me get back. There she is.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Tracy. Uh-huh. Great. So if we don't have any questions in follow-up to the information Tracy shared, and as she said, we will talk about a little bit more as we go forward today. The issue that I was asked to follow up on was there was the group head pointed out that there was a discrepancy between the COVID-19 process, COVID-19 exposure process flowcharts versus the PowerPoint presentation that was provided in the Ventura County reopening information that was provided about 2 weeks ago. And so we went back and looked at that information, where there was a question on inconsistency was if somebody is running a fever, are they required to go home for 7 days? A shout out to both Chuck Pode and Amy Fuller in Employee Health. Chuck took all that information in the PowerPoint to Amy, had her re-review the information, ensure that it complied with all of CDC guidelines. And that information, the PowerPoint itself, has been updated. It's been updated to reflect that there is no requirement that if you're running fever that you must go home for 7 days. The new PowerPoint is posted on the COVID-19 HR site. So if you want to be able to review that new version and be able to reference it, it's there for you. But I think the bottom line in that is that the flowcharts that are the COVID-19 exposure flowcharts are the ones you want to continue to use to guide you anytime you have an employee you believe has had a potential exposure. Okay, so if there's not any other follow-up questions or comments relative to those two old business pieces, then I will turn it over to Ken and Courtney so they can get us started on the Q&A session.
Excellent. So we'll be starting with question 67, which is where we left off on our last Q&A. So the first question is, an employee needs to go out for a specific procedure that would normally be less than 3 days. The employee has stated the doctor is being cautious and has required the employee to take a COVID-19 test. This test will increase the time needed to be out up to 5 days. Does this need to be identified as a COVID-19 leave of absence? Is the employee eligible for natural disaster pay or EPSL? If it is COVID-19 related and he is eligible for natural disaster pay and EPSL, how would we code the 5 days on his timesheet? Let's say the test took 3 days and he only needed to be out 2 days for the procedure.
The answer is this would not be coded as COVID-19 leave because the employee has not had an exposure and is not symptomatic. If the employee can work while the test is pending, they should be allowed to do so. If their underlying condition prevents them from working/teleworking while they await the test results, then the time associated with the pre-operative COVID-19 screening would be handled as a regular medical leave.
Were there any questions?
Nope.
So question 68. We have an employee out due to childcare closure with an extension of leave through May 31st. The backup documentation provided indicates childcare has an anticipated reopening of 5/18. When asked for updated documentation, employee stated the child is a registered is registered kindergarten student and provided the website link stating school closure. So it appears reason change from childcare closure to school closure for the school the child has not yet attended. In using the school closure, an acceptable reason to remain out on leave for the child has not begun attending.
The answer is yes. School closure and childcare issues both qualify under FFCRA. The fact that the minor has not attended that school or any school would not be a problem, since it would be expected that would occur for this kindergarten age minor child.
We do have a question following up on the first question you read, 67. The employee has tested positive. The doctor is still going to proceed with the procedure 2 weeks later and has required him to be quarantined until he has the procedure. And the employee has the doctor's note stating this. Does that change the answer to this?
Yes. So now that he has the test, we definitely, now he has a positive test. So based on the date of the positive test, he would be entitled to, during the 14-day quarantine, he would be entitled to COVID leave. And that's how you would want to process that up to the point where I'm assuming at the 14 days, the doctor is hoping he will retest as negative and then be released to have the surgery. And then again, it would convert because he would be then out on the medical leave for the surgery.
She said, got it. Thank you.
Moving right along. So question 69, when we bring back employees from teleworking and they state they have a child with an immunocompromised system and want to continue teleworking in fear of bringing something home, what are their options? Can they continue teleworking with an accommodation, or how are we supposed to handle that?
The answer is, if telework is available and the employee is able to telework, this should be the first option explored.
We do have a follow-up to that first question. The scenario with the person waiting for the procedure. Does this employee need a workers' comp claim form?
So that's a great follow-up question. They would, in fact, need a workers' compensation. We should provide them with an employee claim form if they have been to the work site at our direction for within 14 days of the diagnosis. If they've been teleworking, the governor's executive order does not apply to individuals who are working from home. So you would only have to provide a claim form for an employee who's positive if within 14 days of that positive test or the day that they became symptomatic, they were required to report to the work site at our direction.
Okay, and follow up to a question for number 69. What if telework is not available?
I can answer that. If telework isn't available, you'll need to consider all other available entitlements, including personal leave of absence, which could be is discretionary to your agency.
No other questions.
So question 70. I have an employee who's caring for a minor child due to childcare issues associated with COVID-19. The employee is seeking 2/3 pay under EPSL and EFMLA, but he has also indicated he will be applying for unemployment and wants to integrate his wages with his EDD payments and his personal accruals if need be. Would he be eligible for unemployment payments from the EDD while receiving 2/3 payments for EPSL and EFMLA? I would also anticipate an overpayment to take place should he receive payments from EDD. Do we continue to pay him the 2/3 regardless of any anticipated overpayments due to EDD payments?
The answer is yes. He would be eligible for wage replacement benefits through EDD for childcare issues associated with COVID-19. It is possible he may have an overpayment once he applies for and receives any UIB benefits. The prudent way would be to reduce his EPSL, EFMLA, based on an estimate of $450 weekly benefit and integrate with his other pays. The downside to this method is that he may have to wait to get his first UIB check, and we have heard the wait time of 2 to 4 weeks is not uncommon. The other element to consider is that he may be eligible for the additional $600 UIB benefit, and that would have to be integrated as well. This may put him in a financial situation, but delaying it will just increase the overpayment when all is said and done. I have listed the website info below for your convenience.
Yeah, I think just to add on to this, it's going to be very important, like we talked about earlier, if you have an employee who's applying for unemployment, it'll be important to explain to them these different options. If we know that it's going to be a while before they actually start receiving a benefit and they are in need of money coming in, you might want to not factor in the unemployment benefit, and then they can deal with the overpayment later. That way, at least they have money coming in to pay the bills, that sort of thing. But they just need to be aware that the overpayment situation will occur if they get approved for unemployment benefits.
I agree. I think it's full disclosure so that they can have some options. It may be important for them to keep the bills paid and the rent paid and continue on, maybe with the understanding that they receive an overpayment, it will have to be paid back.
I'm not seeing any questions on that one yet.
Okay, we're on 71. I have two different scenarios based on the coordination with unemployment benefits direction we've received in the last two Zoom calls. I reached out to all our employees that were in a position to apply for unemployment. Employee number one is on a full leave due to school closure, so receiving 2/3 pay under EFMLA. He has been receiving $2,100 every 2 weeks, which is the max amount with the $450 weekly plus the $600 weekly bonus. It is just shy of his biweekly rate through the county. He has also used vacation banks for the 1/3 time to stay fully paid for a couple pay periods. He has made attempts to contact EDD since he does not think they should have paid him at all for the first couple pay periods, and he has left the money on the debit card they sent him, so he hasn't pulled it off to use. He would rather receive the pay through the county than EDD, since he would basically be unpaid through us if we had him coordinate. This would mean he's not accruing any service hours or banks, and he would likely owe his portion of benefits out of pocket. Not a good deal for this employee at all.
The answer is a repayment will be needed to either EDD or the county. You are correct. The same employees may want to forego UIB so that they can continue to earn continuous service hours, leave accruals, and flex credits. But some may not be concerned about this and instead want the UIB payment. It's the employee's prerogative whether they want to accept the UIB payments.
In the example two, is teleworking 5 hours per day with the other 4 hours off due to EFMLA. She's being paid 2.6 hours under EFMLA and leave without pay for the remaining 1.4. She filed unemployment for that 1.4 hours she's missing, and she's likely going to get $700 per week from unemployment. Even if we only paid her the 5 hours of reg each day and coded the remainder of the day as leave without pay, she would still be overpaid. How would we be expected to remedy that?
The answer is, it's our understanding that EDD will do audits to ensure an employee was not making more off than on. So this employee would need to be aware that reimbursement to EDD of the overpayment may be necessary.
No questions.
No questions. Okay, moving right along, this is our last question. Question 72, for an employee out to due to childcare school closure, once they've used up their 12 weeks of entitlement, does it turn into a personal leave?
The answer is yes. Your agency will have the discretion to approve, deny a personal leave. You should consider all factors when making your final determination, including any available option to telework.
For those out sporadically for childcare closure, but not 3 days in a row, do they need to be on an intermittent leave? Here's an example of two, actually. Example number one, on April 20th, the employee was out 3 hours. On April 22nd, the employee was out 1 hour. On April 28th, the employee was out 1.5 hours. And then on May 1st, the employee was out 2 hours. On the second example, the employee was out April 3rd for 8 hours, April 27th for 4 hours, and then May 8th for 8 hours.
The answer is both examples could potentially be intermittent leaves of absence. In the case where the parents must continue to contend with school or child care closure, you should consider what the employee needs are when making the final determination. There is no harm in filing for an intermittent leave of absence, even if the time is never needed or used.
Okay, so we have a question. When someone is out due to medical reasons for more than 12 weeks and has exhausted their FMLA, but still has a doctor's note to extend them, will this go under ADA?
Yes. I wanted to also preface that when an employee does go on ADA, we will look at all available entitlements. You should be evaluating all available entitlements. From the benefit standpoint, we'll also be looking to see what sort of benefits they're entitled to during this ADA leave. And many times that's an important factor for the employee since the cost of their insurance. Typically, the subsidy goes away during this period of time, assuming the employee has been out for more than 12 weeks. So that may be a consideration for the employee. They should be aware of that. And many times that makes a difference when they can come back sooner or perhaps work a part-time schedule.
She said, thank you.
And I think to follow up on that piece a little bit, just as it's sort of a tangential addition, and before I answer it, I'm just going to say that we love the fact that Chuck Pode is brave enough to turn his camera on and would encourage others to do the same. It's so nice to see other people. Yay! So if any of you other people out there want to let us see you, we would love that. As a matter of fact, and good, Chuck's timing is perfect. Yesterday, he did a webinar that was a nationwide webinar on sort of reopening your business. And one of the points that came out to that is that, you know, being afraid to come back is not necessarily something that is associated with disability, but it is still going to likely be a question some of you will get from a leave perspective. And certainly for your employees who say, I'm afraid to come back, we are going to want to at least engage them in discussion too about what is the basis for that fear. And do we need to contemplate, is there a real disability accommodation issue here? Or is it more about, you know, being sensitive to the fact that people are afraid and having issues? So I think that's something. And, you know, and reassuring them as to what your agency's plan is and what's being done to make sure people are going to be protected pursuant to CDC guidelines. So I think that may be the next phase of challenge, but I thought that was a good sort of thing for you to start to keep in mind, because I think that is a thing you're going to start to hear. So to Ken's point, you know, we need to be considering those ADA pieces and weeding out what really is, it falls within ADA and what does not, and then handling it accordingly.
Okay, yeah, and we do have quite a bit going on in the chat about COVID leaves being personal after the FMLA runs out and not ADA, because I guess ADA is only for disabled employees and not those with the virus. Is that true?
And can I see the question that has been put forward, Tracy?
Sure.
Sorry, are you able to just pull it up on the chat? I don't see it.
I don't think I...
Okay, I got it.
Okay, there's several questions.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe just a few.
So, yeah, so, okay. That is correct that if they are, just want to make sure I'm reading all the words correctly, because there's lots of different nuances here. So yeah, so if their FMLA is exhausted, I agree that, and I will reaffirm this, but I do agree with the question that with the statement that, it would not fall under ADA and it would be transitioned to personal with approval. I believe that that is correct, and that, yes, at that point, you would be able to, if they've used up all of their entitlements, yes, you would then close the COVID leave, and it would then be reopened as a separate leave. And I will reaffirm that piece on the ADA just to make sure, but I do agree with that.
Okay. Yeah, I think the original question said that the employee still had a doctor's note. So I think we're assuming that they still have some sort of disability to be out. So thank you for that clarification, Catherine.
And it looks like from the great beyond, Lorena is sharing some information with us too. Oh, okay. So good. So she's saying that there is actually no need to open an additional COVID leave. Do you want to maybe, sorry, Lorena, my chat just left me there for a second. Can you just put that information into the everyone? Can you send it for everyone so they can see that? I want to make sure that the words are correct.
I can also unmute her if she'd like to just speak to the group.
She says she's going to type it into that. There we go.
Oh, okay. She's going to type it up.
Thank you, Lorena. She'll type it up. Okay. Okay, so we can move on and we'll get that information from her to make sure we're all on the same page.
All right. Do we have any other questions? I'm not seeing any in chat.
Catherine?
Yes.
I'm getting a feel that from some of the agencies that they are unsure whether they should be approving the personal leaves. I mean, can we offer some guidance as far as what sort of considerations they should be looking at? You know, keeping in mind an employee has already been out 12 weeks, and with the school closing for the summer, I think there's some concerns that, you know, what should the agency do? Should they go ahead and just give them that extra time? Is there a human kindness behind it? I mean, what things should be evaluated and looked at, I guess, is what they're asking.
It's a great question. And it's not a question that's simply answered. I think that we all need to reflect upon the fact that these are unprecedented times. Again, from Chuck's webinar yesterday, there was an employment attorney who was on the panel along with Chuck, and she made a really great point, I think, which was that if we get sued because we weren't reasonable in accommodating someone, every juror who would be on that case has experienced the same thing that the employee did, because we've all been touched by this COVID-19 and the uncertainty it represents and fears and anxieties associated with that. So it's very easy for people to feel connected to, certainly to your point, Ken, the human piece of it. So I think we want to be exceedingly reasonable as much as we possibly can be. So, you know, is it automatic? No, we need to have discussions and we need to ask for documentation and we need to have fact patterns that support these things. But I also think we want to look at, you know, if someone is teleworking and that is really working for the department and there's a preference that they be in office versus a true necessity, we need to be reflecting that in the decisions we're making within the agency. And I think that is going to be the thing that guides us and keeps us in a place where if at the end there really is somebody where we ultimately need to require them and they feel they can't come and there's some litigation that comes from that, the protection is that we were as fair as we could be and as reasonable as we could be. So again, I don't think anything's an automatic, but I do think within the parameters of what's being provided, you know, certainly as you read, like look at the childcare issue, formal school is coming to a close, so people don't have school closure, but I think ability to get summer childcare is somewhat limited and complicated for parents. And so we need to look at that case by case and consider those facts and try to be as reasonable and fair as and flexible as we can be in these unprecedented times.
Some of the examples that I've heard are, you know, asking parents to watch grandchildren, perhaps having the employee work a part-time schedule. Of course, they should have already evaluated the telework portion already. So I think it's a time where we have to be really open-minded and creative and also consider the portion where in many cases, the personal leave, I'm going back to this because it is a huge factor. The insurance portion for a personal leave typically requires the employee to pay the full cost of their health benefits. So I need to make sure that's full disclosure and it's upfront for the employee to consider in that piece that they need to decide in.
And I think that's really a great point. I mean, I think this is where the moment that we have really requires sort of the cliched statement of think outside the box, but it's really a truth right now, is that there may be lots of different ways, you know, staggering schedules, changing schedules. So we need to be able to show that we've considered all those things before we get to a place where we're just not going to approve something. And that may be the right decision, but we just at least need to be able to show we've considered all the other possible choices and that we have documentation showing that. And if really operational needs are such that that's where we need someone and we can't reasonably accommodate in a different way, then that's what it is. But we have put the right pieces in place for that.
In addition, unlike HIPAA protected medical leaves, we can ask more questions. We can ask, you know, have you thought outside of the box, like Catherine stated, and, you know, have you considered other options? I mean, this is a personal leave, so it's discretionary, and you are allowed to ask more questions. Just stay away from the medical piece of it.
Correct.
Catherine, did you see Lorena's response?
Oh, okay, great. Thank you, Lorena. When adding an extension, you will let Prestagia deny FMLA and just run the general employer emergency pandemic leave policy for the remaining of the leave. So it's great information, and we can certainly, maybe we can even add that data to our sheet here before we place it onto the website, so you guys will have that reference as well.
And there is a follow-up question. If an employee has an underlying medical condition, has a medical note, and is out due to COVID-19 and has now exhausted FMLA, it would be transitioned to a personal leave, correct? No other leaves would be available?
No, that actually, if they have a note, they should consider doing a ADA actually before a personal leave.
Right, kind of what we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy, I'm not sure, was there a question prior to this question that came in that we didn't address, maybe?
Yeah, Kent, that was the one that Ken was kind of reading out.
Got it. Sorry. It's okay. Just trying to keep up.
And then there is a comment, the general employer emergency pandemic leave in Prasajya is considered personal. It's a statement. I don't think it doesn't, there's no question mark. So I don't think it's a question. I think they're stating that it's a personal leave. Is that something that Courtney or Lorena?
You run it as a person, as if you were to run a personal leave under other, and then you just apply that policy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
And Lorena's wondering if we, she said, wouldn't we use CFRA? Oh, never mind. Sorry. She said, never mind. Thank you. The person who gave that statement said, just info for everyone.
Great.
Okay. So
that's all right. So any other questions from the group, whether related to what we talked about today, questions, comments, concerns for today that you want the group to consider or that you want us to go back and get some more clarification on? We'll give you a minute to bubble those up to the surface and see if anything comes up.
So then to clarify my previous statement about the pandemic personal leave, you still have to go under the pandemic tab on the dropdown. So the users will be able to know what I'm explaining. So it's still under pandemic, and you're just going to apply that policy, the general employer policy, emergency pandemic leave policy.
So, thank you, Chuck, is noting our starfish and our new fish. I see that there's a question about whether the county has seen any COVID-19 work comp claims. And the answer to that is yes, we have. And we've seen more in recent days. It does seem like sort of, and this just maybe happenstance or anecdotal, we've had a few more people who seem to have been at work who now find themselves symptomatic and then testing positive in different situations. Again, I think the work comp number has increased a bit based on the governor's order that took effect at the beginning of May, saying that now if you've been to your work site within 14 days, it's presumed to be work-related. So that has definitely driven up, you know, sort of our exposure. Those cases are still, it's a rebuttable presumption. We can still investigate those. And that order is in place until July 5th. As of July 6th, I do believe that there will be probably a bill that will be passed at that point by the California legislature, and that will, I'm sure, make some entitlements for some or all employees permanent, and we will certainly share that information with you when we have that information available.
Do you all see that next question? Would you like me to read that?
Sure, if you can read it out, that might help.
Sure. Just to clarify, an employee was on a COVID medical leave with a doctor's note. FMLA was exhausted. She has an extension. Are you saying leave should be closed at FMLA exhaustion and a new medical ADA leave should be opened?
Not sure if they're referring to Prasajya or VCHRP.
Right.
For our purposes, it would be for VCHRP, it would just be a change in action reason.
Courtney, do you have an answer you want to give for Prasagia?
COVID, from experience, COVID is not considered covered under ADA. So they would need to see what the ADA form is covering as far as the illness. We can't run ADA under COVID. So they would have to just the underlying medical condition. So at that point, if we have doctor's note, yes, we'd have to transition it to an ADA leave. Once FMLA has been exhausted, yes.
Okay, and there's a question about, follow up to that. What if they test positive for COVID-19?
That was a follow up to the...
I'm guessing so. I'm not sure. There is a question relating, I think it's relating to the direct bill, Ken, but it says, is there an update on employees out on leave and their ability to pay health insurance premiums, meaning payment of premiums by credit card?
We are still pursuing that option. We do have a vendor in mind. We are still finalizing some of the forms that need to go out. Unfortunately, with COVID, it kind of put it on the back burner for a short time until we can get all of our regular processes caught up and up to date. But as we hear more about that, we will roll that out to you.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, you know, right now, all of the department leave case managers are billing the employees for their premiums that are due. This direct bill would bring that in-house so that Ken's team would be overseeing that. We did try to do an add to staff to take care of all of that, but unfortunately with the budget situation, we are not going to be able to proceed with hiring getting a new body on Ken's team. So that's another reason why we're having a difficult time moving forward with that, because there's just not a person to do the administration piece of that. But we absolutely will continue to explore. Okay, so the question, what if they test positive for COVID-19 and exhausted FMLA? I'm not sure what that question is in response to. Let me see what her previous question was.
They're saying what leave should it be applied to? So I guess you would have an employee who already exhausted their FMLA for another reason, and now they test positive for COVID-19. With that...
They should be covered under the employee emergency, I forget the exact name of it, the emergency pandemic policy. So it should approve their leave even if they're not FMLA eligible.
Okay, we'll give it another minute or two and see if anybody has any other comments or questions or follow-ups. Thinking maybe that looks like it's it for today. So we know these continue to be challenging times, and we will continue to do these Q&A sessions as long as you guys have questions for us and give us feedback that you think that it is a valuable use of your time. In the meantime, remember what Dory says, just keep swimming. And before we know it, we'll all be surfing the COVID leave of absence wave safely to shore, and we can't wait to see you all there. Thanks again for your time today, and we will look for your questions over the course of the next couple of days.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.